up? My name is DJ Stellar, and I will be your host for the next hour on my show called It's a Trap, All Things Star Wars. So if you are a Star Wars fan, this is the show for you. And if you're not, maybe I'll make you a Star Wars fan by the end. So listen, every week, Tuesdays 4 to 5, we're going to be talking about, like I said, all things Star Wars. And if you're interested, keep listening. If you're not interested, probably keep listening anyway, because you're going to love Star Wars. So that's all I can tell you about that. So before we get started, I want to give you some Starcabulary. And what is Starcabulary, Hallie? Let me tell you what it is. Starcabulary is phrases that I'm going to be using throughout the show when I'm explaining the recap of a certain episode to you. So all I want to do is, first, I just want to take you through the first episode of Star Wars. Star Wars Episode 1, Phantom Menace, my favorite episode. I'm completely biased toward it, but it's fine. And there's going to be some really good terms in there that we're going to be using throughout the whole time that I'm on the air with you. So I want you to be completely sure what it is. I want me to be completely sure what it is. So the first Starcabulary term that I have for you is Jedi. Now, if you haven't heard this term before, I'm ashamed, first of all. But I'll tell you what it is. It's a member of a knightly order trained to guard peace and justice in the galactic universe. Da, 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 da. Nice. That was the Twilight Zone, but we're good. So, the Jedi are kind of like the peacekeepers in the galaxy. So if you've seen The Hunger Games, the peacekeepers are really scary people. But this is Star Wars, not The Hunger Games, and these are great guys and gals that protect peace and people all over the planet. The next thing that I want to tell you is the Trade Federation. Now, the Trade Federation is an interstellar shipping and trade conglomerate. What a word. We're in college, aren't we? Yes, we are. Oh, and you're listening on Penguin Radio. Speaking of college, wow, this is radio.dominican.edu. So if you didn't know that and you happened upon us, you're a hero. You're a Jedi. I'm so sorry. So the Trade Federation is what basically the entire Episode 1 Phantom Menace is kind of revolving around in this first episode. So get psyched, because you're going to become very intimate with the Trade Federation. Finally, pod racing is another element that's going to happen in Episode 1. And this is a dangerous racing sport that citizens bet on in the universe of Star Wars. So obviously we need to have some Star Wars background music, because what kind of a show would this be if we didn't have Star Wars? And I'm going to briefly take you through, not briefly, it's going to take a long time. We're going to go through the entire episode of Phantom Menace, Star Wars Episode 1, here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Sit tight, pull up a Star Wars something, I don't know. And here we go, folks. So the episode starts, and we find a trade dispute between the Trade Federation and the outlying systems of the Galactic Republic, which lead to a blockade of Naboo. Hallie, what's Naboo? Let me tell you. It's a planet where Queen Amidala, who's one of the main head honchos in this movie, she lives on Naboo, and this is her home planet. There are two Jedis, and like I said, you know what a Jedi is now, so I'm not even going to explain it to you again. Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi, and they're trying to solve this dispute for Naboo. Now, the Trade Federation is in league with Darth Sidious, and Sidious is evil by his name. I think you can tell that he's evil. And he orders an attack on Naboo. So this causes problems for the Jedi, because they're just trying to protect the peace, keep people happy, keep people safe. And now there's an attack coming to their planet. So Amidala... No, that's not right. Qui-Gon Jinn and Kenobi escape the attack that Darth Sidious has attempted on them. And they have to leave Naboo, obviously, because they're fending for their lives. Now, Queen Amidala, who I explained to you before, tells Newt Gunray, who's another guy that's in charge of Naboo, that she's unhappy about the blockage. She needs to have a trade for her people. She needs to have her people happy and safe. And she's not that psyched about what's happening. Oh, wow. Music's just jumping all over the place. Wow, that's awesome. I love it. So, now here's another person. Palpatine. Palpatine's not a cool guy either. He and Newt Gunray are kind of in league with Darth... I mean, as we'll find later, Darth Sidious and Palpatine are the same guy. So, that's a little spoiler alert for you. But, Palpatine is ordering all these bad things to happen to Naboo. Newt Gunray's kind of like his little puppet. He's just waving him around, doing whatever he wants with it. And so Palpatine is the senator at the time of Naboo, and he sends a transmission from Naboo but strategically has his hologram timeout. It's kind of like hinting that there's an invasion that's happening and that the people of Naboo are in danger. Qui-Gon then saves a Gungan outcast named Jar Jar Binks. And everybody hates Jar Jar. Oh, poor little Minx. He proves to be clumsy, but a helpful traveling companion from time to time. And he proves his worth later on. Don't you worry, Jar Jar Binks fans. We'll come around to you. Jar Jar takes the two Jedi to his underwater home, where the Jedi receive safe and secret passage to Naboo. The Jedi find that Amidala has been captured by the Trade Defense Force and rescue her and take her back to Coruscant, which is the capital of the Galactic Republic. So far we have Naboo, we have Coruscant, and I think we had one other place. But Naboo is kind of Amidala's home planet, and Coruscant is kind of where the Jedis are from, where all the good guys are stationed. It's like the capital. It's like, you know, Sacramento is to California. Coruscant is to something bigger than Coruscant. The Galactic Empire? I don't know. Who knows? So, in route to Coruscant, however, the Queen's ship is attacked by Federation battleships. And this is a problem because, obviously, the Queen's on board and she's got a mission. The Jedis are on board. They got a mission. Ooh, we're starting the music over again. Yeah, this is a 10-hour loop, so stay tuned, man. So the ship has been attacked. They can't land. They can't make it all the way to Coruscant, so they have to land in a desert planet named Tatooine. Holla at your girl, Tatooine. So while they're on Tatooine, they're kind of just wandering around trying to find parts for this ship that is completely just messed up. They befriend a young Anakin Skywalker. Aw, Anakin. You've heard of him. Everybody knows who Anakin Skywalker is. Anakin is a slave at the time under Watto, who's this flying little creature. Anakin and his mother have been slaves their entire lives, yada, yada, yada. Qui-Gon decides that he's going to make a deal with Watto that if young Anakin Skywalker wins this pod race that he's entered in, he will be able to be free and he can do whatever he wants and holla, 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 all good things. So, if Anakin wins the race, he's set free and Watto has to fix Queen Amidala's ship free of charge because they couldn't afford all the parts that were needed to fix her ship. If he loses, however, the Jedi lose the ship completely, and obviously Anakin and his mother will stay stuck as slaves. So the race happens, Anakin wins the race, confetti, tears, everyone's psyched. He frees himself, and at the request of his mother, he joins the Jedis on their way to Coruscant. So now, little Annie is joining the big kahunas on the way to the capital city, capital planet, rather. And if you just tuned in, you're right in the middle of a great movie, and we're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So before the ship takes off, Qui-Gon Jinn is attacked by the apprentice to Darth Sidious, a.k.a. Palpatine. And the apprentice that he's attacked by is Darth Maul. Darth Maul is by far the coolest villain ever in the universe of anything evil created ever. But we'll talk about that later, too. Qui-Gon barely escapes with his life, and the pack continues safely to Coruscant. Qui-Gon then, you know, kind of relates what just happened. He talks to Obi-Wan about it. He talks to the Jedi Council about it. And in doing that, Qui-Gon brings Anakin to the Jedi Council to request that he be brought up as a Jedi also. However, Master Yoda, that's another buzzword. If you haven't heard Master Yoda, you should probably just leave. And the other Jedis disapprove, arguing that Anakin is too old and holds too much hate and fear in his heart. So basically, Qui-Gon decides that he's going to secretly train Anakin because he sees something special in this kid that he thinks he can cultivate and use later on, and that Anakin can be a great Jedi one day. Ta-ta! It's really hard not to hum along with this background music because this is really good. So, meanwhile, Amidala votes in the council to remove the leadership in Naboo that she currently has, and she takes matters into her own hands by returning to Naboo. This is a real gutsy move by our queen. Because obviously there's an attack on Naboo and she's got to go back there. Amidala requests the help of the Gungans to wage war on the Trade Federation. So in doing this, she kind of has to... Oh, also the Gungans have already left their underwater home And the Gungans, remember, are the people like Jar Jar. Not people. They're not people. They're creatures like Jar Jar. They look like reptiles, kind of, if we're being honest. And they have left their underwater home because they don't feel safe because of the Trade Federation attacking Naboo, so on and so forth. So they're in some secret location that only Jar Jar knows. So right then, he comes in handy. He's got to jump in and save the Jedi, take them to where the Gungans are hiding. So Amidala requests the help from the Gungan leader, and he's a little hesitant at first, but they kind of work out a deal so that the Gungans can help him out. When Amidala fills in the Jedi on and her army of her master plan, Darth Sidious is alerted of the imminent attack because Darth Sidious is the worst. He puts out some battle droids that are dispersed to attack the Gungan army and kill a great deal of them off. And they do just that. They kill a lot of the Gungans off. There's a lot of death and dying. Jedi just in pieces everywhere. I'm trying to paint a picture for you, but, you know. So the Gungans are fighting a losing battle until young Anakin boards a starfighter and destroys the droid control ship from inside. Dun, dun, dun. This is kind of a recurring theme. We'll talk about that later, too. Destroying it from the inside out. Cough, cough. But Anakin uses his force, his early ideas of the force, and really just takes matters into his own hands by jumping in that starfighter. While all this is taking place, however, Darth Maul and Qui-Gon Jinn meet again with Obi-Wan alongside his master, Qui-Gon. So this is happening. There's a whole fight sequence. And this is actually the greatest lightsaber battle, I think, lightsaber duel in all of the Star Wars films. It is long. It's intense. It's fierce. It's fiery. It's other words. So the three are battling intensely for a good amount of time when Maul suddenly stuns Qui-Gon. Man, I really just can't talk. When he stuns Qui-Gon with a hit to the chin and puts his lightsaber through the Jedi's chest. So ask me if he died. Did he die? He died. Right there. Qui-Gon just dead. I feel like we need like a moment of silence for that or something. Like, respect. So, enraged, Obi-Wan flings himself at his master's killer and eventually ends up slicing Maul in half like a piece of bread. This makes him tumble to his death. Qui-Gon then makes Obi-Wan train Anakin as if he was his own apprentice. So, in that moment, we see Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan kind of having another final, like, bonding moment between them where Qui-Gon just says, "Hey, man, you're it. You the guy." And he's really sweaty. But, like, it's Liam Neeson, so, like, how bad can it be? Not that bad. After that, the battle is won by young Skywalker's bravery and the Gungans. Obi-Wan becomes a Jedi Knight. At that point, he was only an apprentice to Qui-Gon, who was his Jedi Knight. And the people of Naboo and the Gungans organize a peace treaty to remain eternal friends. Ah, friendship wins the day. So, all in all, there's an overarching theme of, good versus evil, good winning over evil, so on and so forth. I want to talk briefly about how Anakin killing off, or rather shooting the droid ship from the inside is kind of reverberated throughout the rest of the series. There's all kinds of hints at that. Luke later takes care of a couple Death Stars by shooting them from the inside, a few other people. It's just kind of something that it's iconically Star Wars is what I like to say. So this movie, it's The Phantom Menace, Star Wars Episode 1, was made and released in 1999. It is the fourth one ever made, but it's the first in the saga. So some people get a little confused by the order. I know I get confused, but they released them in different orders because that's just how George Lucas felt was going to be best for this series. And interesting fact about kind of how it broke the bank almost in box office reviews is that this movie was released, I think it was about a month before or a month after Meet Joe Black was released. And so this is before, obviously, the age of everything's on the internet already. There's trailers everywhere you look, yada, yada, yada. And so Meet Joe Black was in the theaters. And because The Phantom Menace was coming out after it, people were super psyched, and they all wanted to see a trailer of it. But the only way that they could see it was by going to see Meet Joe Black. So this boosted the ticket sales of Meet Joe Black, which was obviously going to be a box office hit because hashtag Brad Pitt was in it. But the ticket sales went through the roof when fans heard that the trailer Phantom Menace was attached to the beginning of the film. So people would literally buy tickets just to see the trailer at the beginning of the movie. What? That's crazy. We don't do that now. We definitely don't do that now. So this just sort of the box office numbers, obviously, for Meet Joe Black. But like nobody's going to complain about that because equally wonderful film. Not equally. I didn't mean that. So that is my first segment for a recap on The Phantom Menace, Star Wars Episode 1. You are listening to DJ Stellar. That's me talking. And this is my show. It's a trap. All things Star Wars. I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a few. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
Chasing sleep, everybody's worried about me. In 2D, say I'm in 2D. And it's been 2 years, I miss my home. There's a fire burning in my bones. Still believe, yeah, I still believe. And all of those things I didn't say, wrecking balls inside my brain. I was screaming.
This is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. I am DJ Stellar. You are listening to Penguin Radio. I said it again. There it is, just so you double know. So I want to introduce you to my very next segment, and let me tell you, it's a doozy. No, it's not. This is a segment that I call Arguing Against the Empire. So this is where I go ahead and I take criticisms and arguments against the movie and things that they did wrong, yada, yada, yada. And I either dispel them or I agree with them. And seeing as this is my favorite movie ever, might be a little slanted at this point. So the first argument that we have against the Empire is in Anakin's hovel. This is Anakin's little home on Tatooine. When everyone introduces themselves, Qui-Gon says, in quotes, "I'm Qui-Gon Jinn." And we see Padme mouth the words. Somebody said that this was a mistake on behalf of, obviously, the actress playing Padme. However, I would argue with this, disagree with it, because Padme was a sassy little minx, and she was just not feeling it with Qui-Gon. I don't know. Liam Neeson couldn't work his charms over on her or something. And personally, I just think that she was being sassy, and she had heard it 1,000 times. You're Qui-Gon Jinn. Everybody knows you think you're the coolest. You're not, even though everybody knows that he is. And so I would argue that that was not a mistake from the people that made the film. I would say that it was quite supposed to be there. Thank you very much for your argument, but it's invalid. Ha! All right, next argument. When Amidala's ship lands in Coruscant, there's a lot of business and air traffic. The ship doesn't reflect any of that traffic on its shiny, mirror-like coating. It only reflects the basic landscape. Touche. Touche. When I first read this, I was low-key a little scared because I was like, you're so right. They don't do anything with that. However, when I dug into it with my Star Wars shovel, nice, good term. That's really good. I uncovered, sticking with the shovel theme, that, no, the ship is supposed to do that. The point of the ship was to give an illusion of peace and tranquility because it carried the queen. People, it's right in front of our faces. So showing all the hustle and bustle would defeat that illusion. So the material used was created specially to only reflect landscapes because typically people are soothed by landscapes. What are they called? Sunrises, sunsets. Man, basic terms we can't get. So, yeah, you're wrong too, Mr. whoever you are. The next argument that I have. Anakin's mother pours the travelers some liquid in their meal, but it's invisible. So I went back and I watched this like 18 times, and you're definitely right. It was 100% invisible, and I can't fight with you on that because I don't think she would pour an invisible liquid. I think they just made a little continuity mistake there in making sure that she was actually pouring something. But hey, great acting from everybody believing that she was pouring something. So that concludes my segment on Arguing Against the Empire. Applause. Yeah, you did it. That's all the arguments that I have for you on that. The next thing that I want to talk about is the context clues. So, if you just tuned in, this is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. I am DJ Stellar. You are listening to It's a Trap, all things Star Wars. And we're going into context clues, people. So, buckle up. Listen, George Lucas is very obvious in naming things. Obviously not George Lucas. But the characters are aptly named for what they're doing or what kind of a person they will be in the film. So we're going to start with the most obvious one, in my opinion, Darth Sidious. Okay, let's just pull this apart for a second. Darth means dark. Sidious is shorter for insidious. Dark and insidious. He's obviously evil. If you didn't catch that, I'm sorry, you're going to have a very difficult life. So Insidious's real, like, Webster's Dictionary definition is proceeding in a gradual and subtle way with harmful effects. So, Hala, that's the perfect name. It perfectly describes Sidious in the prequel trilogy. He slowly becomes this evil, manipulative, conniving guy, and he's dark. So, again, if you didn't catch that, I'm so sorry for you and your future. No, I'm kidding. You're going to be fine. The next name, Skywalker. Okay. Hello. I think this one is a great name, obviously. It's implying that he's walking with the gods. He's somebody that's above even the earth. He's not Dirt Walker. That would suck. He's not, I don't know, Fire Walker. Would that imply that he was in hell? Probably. So he's Skywalker. He is kind of above the travesties and minor issues of the world. Now, I didn't look up the name of Anakin because I'm pretty sure they made that up. But, I don't know, the Skywalker thing just kind of does it for me. The next name, Darth Maul. Again, looking at dark. He's bad. He's evil. But Maul is obviously a scratch or a tear. And it's also a tool for crushing. And the root is Mal. So M-A-L, it means bad, obviously. So all of these context clues lead us to believe that Darth Maul is bad. And if you didn't catch that, that's okay. But now we caught it. So holla, we're all here. Now, I want to talk about Darth Maul because he is my favorite character ever. I think he's the coolest. And one time I saw him at Disneyland and I started crying. And I'm not even a crier, so that was a weird experience for everybody involved, including him. And this is a little quote from him. "I was apprenticed to be the most powerful being in the galaxy once. I was destined to become so much more." Oh, that's deep, dude. Thank you, Darth Maul, for that. So, I can't even say this name of what he is. Darth Maul was a male Dathomirian Zabrak Sith Lord who lived during the warring years of the Galactic Republic. He was born to a mother Talzin. He had no father, and he was raised on Dathomir before being taken by Darth Sidious as Darth Sidious's apprentice. So Darth Sidious kind of took him under his wing. Throughout the whole Star Wars series, there's always themes of, even in the dark side, there's themes of kind of taking somebody or something and nurturing them. Nurture over nature. So they really try to take those people or those apprentices and really make them become the best that they can, or the worst that they can, in the case of Darth Maul. So he was... Oh, I thought it said he was homeschooled. I was so psyched. I was homeschooled, but it's cool. He was 1.75 meters. He has yellow and red eyes, if you've never seen him. His skin color is red and black. And he's just so incredibly scary looking. It's fabulous. So I was thrilled to kind of find out that he didn't actually die when he was cut in half like a piece of bread. The Jedi and the Sith both believed that Maul had perished on Naboo, but he survived and went into exile in the Outer Rim. The Outer Rim is where I was talking about in the beginning of this little segment, where some of the outer planets were lying. So there he gained a set of spider-like legs that allowed him to walk again, but his exile made him go mad with thoughts of revenge and shame for what had happened on Naboo. So then during the Clone Wars, his brother found him, and he was taken back to his mom, Talzin, who gave him new robotic legs and restored his mind. So he had two legs originally. They got hacked off. He got the spider legs. They got hacked off. And now he's got robotic legs, which is kind of funny because later on we'll see some arms getting whacked off and some robotic arms coming on. I don't know. I see another theme, if you ask me. So anyway, Maul declared himself and his brother true lords of the Sith, and they set out to seek revenge against Kenobi. And they actually wanted to overthrow the Sith because they wanted to be the most powerful beings in the world. So that is ultimately what happened with Darth Maul. And honestly, I could not be more happy about that because, man, he's killer. So yeah, let me just tell you about this time I went to Disneyland really quick because it might change your life as much as it changed mine. I'm there, right? I don't know. How old am I? Probably like 15-ish. So that shows you how emotionally unstable I am even more. So we're walking around in where even is Star Tours? That's in Tomorrowland. Thank God. Whoa, that was rough. Okay, so we're in Tomorrowland, and they have this whole section devoted to Star Wars. And if you go to Disneyland right now, there's a Season of the Force happening in honor of Star Wars Episode 7 that just came out. And if you didn't see that, probably stop what you're doing after the show ends. Go listen, go watch it, and then we can talk about it after. Anyway, I'm there. We just watched this Jedi show, and it was completely awesome in every way. They have little Jedi babies come up, little Padawans come up, and they battle with each other, and they battle Darth Vader. And then, oh no, Darth Maul comes out, and he's the ultimate villain, and we gotta destroy him. And, of course, the baby Padawans win because they're adorable, and if they didn't win, people would be upset. But anyway, so I see Darth Maul walking away from the stage in anger because he just lost to a bunch of babes. And it changed me. We made eye contact for just a mere second in time in the galactic universe. And man, I just a single tear just like trickled down my cheek, and I will never be the same. So let me tell you, if I got an autograph from Darth Maul, I would probably, wow, if I cried from just seeing him, I don't even know what bodily function would happen if I got his autograph. That's getting a little explicit now. We're going to back out from that. But yes, Season of the Force at Disneyland. If you go now, you go down to Tomorrowland, hanging out. Everything near Star Tours has been changed to Star Wars love. Even Space Mountain, they changed the name to Hyperspace Mountain. You throw a hyper in front of something, it becomes Star Wars, apparently. I don't know. Hyperstellar. Now I'm double Star Wars. Holla. Anyway, you go down there and they have these really cool projections all up on the walls. You can choose if you're going to be on the good side or the bad side, light or dark. Obviously, Star Tours just got redesigned, so that's totally cool too. If you just tuned in, you're listening to radio.dominican.edu. I just said that because it rhymed. And what else is down there? They have so many collectibles, so many cool things if you're into souvenirs from Disneyland and or Star Wars. You can, oh, this is the best. You can go into Innoventions, what used to be Innoventions, right next to Autopia. There it is. And you can meet characters from Star Wars. This is making me lose my mind. I met Chewbacca. And he was the nicest Chewbacca I have ever met. He was so sweet. He wanted to hug everybody. He wanted to do his little at everybody. And I think he might have told me he loved me in Wookiee. I don't know. Probably. And we also met Darth Vader. And that was incredibly intimidating because he's like 12 feet tall. And I'm, you know, like 4 feet tall. So that's completely fine. Oh, I still have Star Wars music playing. Well, this is an eternal thing, I guess. Yeah, so if you are in Southern California, check it out right now. Again, stop what you're doing and just go there. If you're not in Southern California, book yourself a flight now. Do yourself a favor. Check out Star Wars while you still can. We're going to go to a break really quick. When we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit more background of a few more characters, some collectibles you can find around Star Wars Episode 1, and religious themes in The Phantom Menace, Star Wars Episode 1. I am DJ Stellar. You're listening to It's a Trap, all things Star Wars. Stay tuned on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Greetings, friends. We're back again on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I am your fearless host, DJ Stellar, talking about Star Wars. My show is called It's a Trap, all things Star Wars. We're here talking about Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. And before we jump into my next segment, I did a little research on what Anakin's name means. Look at this. It means warrior. What? He's warrior walking in the skies. That's ridiculous in every way. I'm obsessed with him. It's fine. So another thing that I wanted to let you know about is that the movie actually made $45 million domestically and cost $90 million to make. So it made $98 million overseas, but probably still didn't make back the money that it spent to make it. However, still a great film, still made box office records of that time, still killing it. So I want to take you into some background on some of my favorite characters from the flick. I said favorite, but I didn't really mean it. I want to say most influential characters of this movie. So, the first character that I want to explore with you is Jar Jar Binks. Everybody hates Jar Jar Binks, literally everyone. I have not met a single person that actually likes him. And I say, why do you hate Jar Jar Binks? What is it that just really makes you upset about him? And the thing that I get back most of the time is that he's just a little funny, and that's all. That's really all that he brings to the movie. He's just a tiny bit funny, but mostly he's just annoying, and people don't like annoying. So I say, okay, like, I get that. You know, I'm only a little funny and mostly annoying, and I have, you know, about as many friends as Jar Jar does. So, like, I get it, but I also understand where he's coming from. People don't like the way that he talks. He talks in this kind of high pitch, like, almost like a baby voice. It's a little creepy, if we're being honest. And people don't like that either. He apparently, there's a theory that in Attack of the Clones, which is one of the movies that we will talk about in the future, he's a delegate to the Galactic Senate from Naboo and is responsible for giving the speech that convinces the Senate to grant Palpatine emergency powers that allow him to activate his clone army and leads to the eventual rise of the Empire. So this leads into another theme that I found, another fan theory situation, that people believe that Jar Jar is a secret Sith Lord. What? Jar Jar? No, he's such a nice guy. I don't believe this, but there are fan theories because there are fans of Star Wars and they make theories, thus the name fan theories. So here's what they think. Some of their evidence is Jar Jar really has like an inkling towards battle, and he really loves the idea of war, and he always wants to be involved in it and wants to be involved in the planning, so on and so forth. So people think that he has darkness in his heart, the kind of darkness that you would need if you were a Sith Lord. He is pretty incompetent, so I feel like, honestly, if he was evil, he would have a little more of his life together. But he always kind of uses ideas of the Force. So he has like a Force jump that he uses every once in a while. He flips around like a wild animal. And then apparently there's a couple clips where Jar Jar's mouth is moving in sync with other characters' dialogue. So instead of saying that was a mistake on behalf of the people that actually made the movie, people think that they were hinting that Jar Jar was actually manipulating people's words and thoughts to say exactly what it was that he wanted them to say. So all along, he was controlling them, even when they thought he was just stupid and didn't know anything. So Jar Jar, I'm so sorry if you are actually said Sith Lord. That would suck. Jar Jar is, other than that, I mean, he's relatively harmless, is what we've seen. A little bit of background on Jar Jar. His dad's name was George. How cute is that? George Binks. That's adorable. Now I'm getting texts from people that say that Jar Jar isn't bad. Love Jar Jar. Jar Jar's a good guy. I think Jar Jar's a good guy. But, you know, the rest of the world agrees that he's completely irrelevant and the worst, but it's fine. So this story, this is actually a really sad story, so get out your tissues because you're going to need them, ladies. Jar Jar, this makes me laugh every time I say this. So you know how there's that saying, you have a face only your mother could love? I get that all the time, so that's why I know it so well. But no, Jar Jar, his dad tried to kill him. This is so sad. I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh about this, Jar Jar. This is a sensitive moment. They went on a fishing trip, and Jar Jar goes... This is so funny. Jar Jar made a mistake. He didn't anchor down the boat that his dad was fishing with. And this causes his dad to fall out of the ship, or the little boat that they had. They lose all their fish that they caught, so on and so forth. His dad is heated, let me tell you. He is heated, Mr. Binks. And Jar Jar's like, wait a minute, I'll just swim to our homeland, because they're excellent swimmers. I'll swim to our homeland, and I'll get us a new ship so that, like, I can save the day, we can have a better fishing trip, so on and so forth. And at first, George Binks is like, bro, you'll die if you swim that. And then he thinks better of it. He's like, this is such an easy way to get rid of my son. And he's like, dude, Jar Jar, swim it. You can make it. Like, absolutely. You can totally do it. And so he convinces Jar Jar to swim it. And if it wasn't for the love of his mother, so I guess he does have a face only his mother could love, his mom says, Jar Jar, what you doing? Like, don't do that. And she, you know, chastises George, so on and so forth. So that's just a sad little story for you if you're having a good day. I just ruined it for you. I'd like to apologize. That Jar Jar wasn't even that liked by his parents. So, you know, if you're out there and your dad hasn't tried to ship you off via water channels, I think you're doing okay. The next character that I would like to take a look into the life of is Qui-Gon Jinn. And it's just, we're looking at him because he's dead and this is the only opportunity we get to. And hashtag Liam Neeson. So he was born almost a century before the Battle of Yavin, and he is a human male. Look at that, the first human male we've encountered thus far. He has an exceptional amount of midichlorians in his blood. What are midichlorians, Hallie? I'll tell you. Midichlorians are tiny cells that are found in the blood of Jedi. And if you have a lot of midichlorians, it means you have a better inclination towards the Force. So, Anakin has an incredibly high count of midichlorians in his blood. Qui-Gon Jinn is the same way. And this is another reason why a lot of people think that Qui-Gon was so hell-bent on getting Anakin to be his apprentice, because he saw a lot of himself in him, is what a lot of people say. So, yes, Qui-Gon was exceptional at his craft. He was taken as an infant to Coruscant to train to become a Jedi, and he was discovered to have a lot of Force potential. He maintained some ties with his homeworld, and at one point he obtained a special stone from his homeworld's River of Light. And so then the background goes on, and it talks about how at the age of 10 he was the strongest and best Jedi in his class, and kind of the most powerful one that they had. So it makes sense that, you know, they gotta kill him off in the first one, or else when else are they gonna get rid of him, right? So, that concludes my background on the two characters highlighted in this film. Jar Jar does come back in some of the later movies, but he never has as much of a role as he does in the first one. The next thing that I want to talk about is the religious themes that are in Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. If you just tuned in, you are listening to It's a Trap, All Star Wars All the Time with DJ Stellar on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So there's a lot of religious themes here. People argue one way or the other. Is it Christian? Is it not? Who knows? Only George Lucas can know, if we're being honest. But I took a Christianity and Contemporary Film class here at the beautiful campus of Dominican University of California. Sidebar, it's 75 degrees today, so we're chilling in February. But back to this. And in this Christianity and Contemporary Film class, we talked about Star Wars Episode I so much. All the Star Wars movies, actually. We kind of briefly just went over everything. And I would say that, yes, there is a large religious aspect. First of all, Anakin was born from a virgin. What? So was Jesus. So, I don't know. That just kind of hints in one way toward him being like a savior figure. However, when he starts to become evil, you know, that situation with Darth Vader, heavy breathing, then it kind of goes in the opposite direction from a religious theme. However, you know, I think it starts off pretty strong. Obviously, there's a big overarching theme, like I said before, of morality. Queen Amidala is upset at suffering and slavery. She wants the best for her people, good versus evil. There's kind of an eternal struggle between it. I mean, if you didn't have a struggle between good versus evil in a movie, do you even have a movie at all? I don't know. But, yeah, so overall, I think that there is an element, a large element of religion in it. You can take it however you want it, of course, but I would argue that yes. And I also would say that there's something in the Force. People have said, no, it's not. The Force is not religious because it doesn't hint to anything of having a god or some higher power, because it can be used for good or bad. However, you can choose to do good or bad in your life now, and there's, you know, a higher power now. So who knows? You know, if you think the Force is not alluding to a higher power, there you go. But personally, I do. And that concludes my religion segment. Thank you very much. Moving on. I'll hold the applause. Thanks. Moving on to my final segment of the day, collecting the stars. So this is a segment where I'm going to tell you about cool things from the movie that either have been purchased or can be purchased, / where you can find them. Also, I want to talk about some, I will be talking about some props that were found from the movie, and what they actually were, because there's some weird things in the galactic universe, folks. So, the first thing that I want to talk about is the Jedi Comlink. This is a pre-cell phone era that we're living in here with Star Wars. So they use these things called, the Jedi's use things called comlinks, and that connects them to other Jedi's, other people that have comlinks. They can also send samples of blood, as we see in Phantom Menace. It counts your midichlorians, all kinds of really cool things. So Qui-Gon whips this thing out towards the middle of the movie, and takes a sample of Anakin's blood and then sends it to Obi-Wan Kenobi to count his midichlorians back in the home base. And this is so funny to me. The comlink saw a lot of different forms as it was being created. But ultimately what it ended up being is a razor, like a woman's razor that you use for shaving. That's what you use a razor for. So, it was a Gillette, is that how you say that? Gillette Ladies Sensor Excel razor handle, that they just sprayed, gray or silver. And, yeah, then they attached some cool-looking pins on it and made it look super, you know, high-tech and such. So, ladies, if you're out there and you have a Gillette Excel razor, you might actually have a comlink, and you might actually be a Jedi, so that's awkward. The next super cool thing that is a collectible from not only episode 1 but some of the other episodes is C-3PO's head. And C-3PO is a robot that Anakin Skywalker created to kind of help his mom out around the house and do some day-to-day tasks that maybe he couldn't do because he was working all day, or, you know, because they were slaves, they had a lot of extra work to do when they got home. So the C-3PO helmet, the original one, was worn on screen by Anthony Daniels. And he was, you know, he played the protocol droid that kind of did the day-to-day tasks like I was talking about. He, later on in one of the later films, we'll see that C-3PO is actually worshipped as a golden god by the little Ewoks, who are also really cute. So cute. So this original helmet that was being sold by Profiles in History in December of 2008 it sold for only $120,000. Like, what? That is a piece of history. Star Wars history. And if I had $120,000, you better believe I would spend it on C-3PO's head. That's how special he is to me. And he can speak over 6 million languages, so no big deal, but it's kind of a big deal. The final piece of star collecting that I found was something that, guess what? It's on eBay today, right now. So if you want this, you can go get it and you can have your very own piece of Star Wars memorabilia in your house. Five ever. But it's a little creepy. It's a life-size Star Wars Episode One Watto full-size prop. So Watto was the slave owner of Shmi and Anakin and many other slaves, and he was the jerk that wouldn't sell the pieces to Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan Kenobi when they were trying to fix Queen Amidala's ship. So this is a life-size replica of the actual prop, and it was made in 1999, right when the thing was, right when the movie was put out. It stands about 3 feet tall, 3.5 feet tall, and it's on a little stand, so you can, you know, if you have a kid, put it in their room some morning to wake them up for school. Fun fact about Watto, he actually, the sounds of his wings beating was actually an umbrella being open and closed really fast. So, that's interesting. You could just do that, actually, to wake your kid up. That might be scarier than actually having Watto. I'm never having children. So this fine piece of history is only going for $1,500. So if you want, send me a text, shoot me an email, holla at your girl. I'll put your name in. You can buy it now and send it to me if you're interested. If not, that's okay too. So yes, that is the conclusion of my Star Wars talk for you today. Thank you so much for listening. You are wonderful in every way. This has been Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. If you want to have a little more information on the next Star Wars movie, Star Wars Episode 2, believe it or not, it's going to be Star Wars Episode 2, tune in next week, Tuesday, 4 to 5, again, for my show, It's a Trap, All Things Star Wars, at radio.dominican.edu on Penguin Radio. You guys are fabulous. Have a wonderful day, and of course, may the Force be with you.